You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
From our studio to yours, this is Various Artists.
Ahia he mari e tēnā koutou katoa, ko mea tōku ingoa.
Ko Sophia tōku ingoa, no mai haere mai ki Various Artists mō tēnei wiki.
We've got something exciting for you today. For our last show of 2025, we're going back and we're recapping the best of Various Artists for this year.
This year, we interviewed over 140 artists and creative types. Yeah, I did the math. Covering shows and creative projects from across Tāmaki Makaurau's art landscape and beyond. Shout out to Beth, who co-hosted the show with me up until May. And a very thank you, big thank you to Maya, who's sitting with me now. And thanks, it's been so good having you on the show.
It's been so nice. Thank you for asking me to come join. I never thought I'd be one for the radio, if I'm being honest, but it has been so lovely meeting everyone and such a gorgeous time.
The radio loves you.
Oh, thanks, and I love it. For my highlights this year, I selected interviews with one of my dear friends and beautiful, beautiful painter, Sophie Gregg, about her practice and work within Providence III at Ivan Anthony, which was showing in September. And I also am going to replay my interview with Tui Diprose about their show Rituals at Room in June. They spoke so beautifully about the show and it was so gorgeous. So those are my picks. So what are your picks?
My picks for my highlights of this year, I selected my interview with Georgia Arnold about her show Ritual at Melanie Roger Gallery in November. And a little bit earlier in the year, Peter Robinson, my interview with him about his show with Giorgio Griffa, Differences in Kind and Rhythm at Te Uru in June.
Kia aha, Ofakara. We'd love to hear your thoughts on these pieces. So tōku patahi mai. You can text us on 5395-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5
after the show, koe e ware ware e ahe ana koutou te whakarongo ki e nei kōrero anō hei pakihere roki roki maronga i te pai tuku tuku o Irirangi Poho, me haere ki 95BFM irakati.com. You can catch all of these chats and more by podcast on the 95BFM website, 95BFM.com. Let's get into the show.
Oh, that's a good art.
Georgia Arnold is a Tāmaki-based multidisciplinary artist working intuitively across a range of mediums, including drawing, ceramics, painting, metalwork, and sculpture. In her solo exhibition at Melanie Roger Gallery in November, Retreat, Arnold drew inspiration from her time spent house-sitting in Pukekohe, letting her semi-rural surroundings, new routines, and everyday encounters inform the direction of a new body of mixed-media drawings and sand-cast charms. Using her art making as an escape from conflict and a canvas for healing, the works embrace the chaos, tension, and potential for a messy, expressive, and loud autobiography, obscuring the subjects of her introspection in the process. I really love this interview. I thought she spoke so beautifully about her work, and I just loved hearing her talk about it. So here is her interview with Georgia Arnold now.
Kia ora, I'm Georgia. I'm kind of a maker that works in quite a few different mediums. So yeah, I do a lot of drawing, painting, some ceramics, metalwork, and a bit of installation as well. So yeah, I do like to work in a lot of kind of mediums, and I feel like I'm kind of exploring like myself and like my place in the world, and it feels like quite kind of personal work where I'm like, yeah, kind of checking in with myself and yeah.
Very immersive.
Yeah.
Moving on to talking a bit more specifically about this exhibition. Mm. This body of work currently showing in your solo exhibition Retreat at Melanie Roger Gallery was primarily made during your time house-sitting at your dad's place in Pukekohe. I guess speaking to the exhibition's title, it does feel like there are these kind of personal and homely references that come through the works. How did this environment and idea of retreat direct your creative interests or process within the series?
Mm. Yeah, it's really interesting for like titling works or like your bodies of works. I feel like it comes quite late for me. Like I tend to kind of work backwards with like a kind of making forward practice where I kind of make to figure out things, and then it's kind of afterwards that I've kind of been able to sit with the body of work or with the feelings around the work that I can kind of title it. And I feel like, yeah, Retreat really sort of encapsulated the feelings of the work and sort of being based out south. I feel like, yeah, Retreat felt quite perfect just because it was kind of like, it's a word you can kind of retreat from battles and conflict and kind of prioritizing your like safety or something in that way. And I feel like it's been quite a like chaotic year, and I've sort of kind of tried to do a lot of things to sort of make myself like feel safe and all right. And I feel like actually like my art making practice has sort of been something that I've used to, I found it quite challenging. It's kind of like, can I make art that like comforts myself, or can I make art to work through difficult feelings and situations, and kind of showing up and making work despite just feeling like you're on kind of shaky ground. So I feel like that aspect of retreat, yeah, was felt very relevant. And I think it's also kind of connected to like going on a retreat, or like taking yourself out of your normal environment in order to be with yourself or process things. So yeah, I quite liked how this word kind of sat on the fence between, yeah, kind of going away from conflict and also sort of taking care of yourself and taking time. So yeah, I'd spent 6 months house sitting in Pukekohe at my dad's place, and he was like road tripping the South Island at the time, and so I was walking the dog and kind of looking after the place, and I ended up kind of like gardening a lot as well to kind of really feel settled, because I think I'm not used to like moving around quite so much. And yeah, it took a while for me to feel settled and able to make work. So I started kind of making work, just doing small A4 drawings at night, because it's what felt like easiest and most comfortable to me. So I think, yeah, those feelings of comfort and kind of dealing with difficult emotions is definitely present in the work. And yeah, like changing sort of family relationships and changing relationships and to space, and kind of living in a home that doesn't feel like your home, and yeah, lots of kind of things to do with that. Yeah,
I think that's really beautiful, the way that you've used your art making as a way to process these things in your personal life. And it's always so important to come back to those, I guess, places of maybe more peace and solitude when you're feeling so chaotic in other spaces in your life.
Yeah. And I think, it is peace and solitude, but I think definitely like the chaotic energy and like the mark making and the, I feel like, that comes through in the works as well. Like there is often this kind of like buzz of anxiety, I feel like, behind the images. So, kind of that peaceful maybe scenes and imagery, but definitely kind of battling with this sort of chaotic mark making energy.
Put it all on the page.
Yeah.
Something that really stood out to me with this show is the way that you've presented these larger works. Rather than a standard stretch canvas, you've tacked the canvas to these boards beneath, creating these wavy like borders and tensions, allowing the backing boards to be just as much a part of the work as the canvas. Talk to me a bit about this choice. What is your thought process behind this mode of presentation, and what did that process of presentation look like?
Yeah, I was really excited about this mode of presentation, actually. I think because I like to treat a lot of what I do as kind of drawing, that even when I'm working on canvas, I like to kind of make it feel more like a drawing. And I think in the past I have kind of worked on stretch canvas, and I get a little bit frustrated with the fact that I can't kind of work quite hard on it. And I found that if I stapled work to the wall or to like wooden panels, I was able to kind of treat it more like paper and it to feel more like a drawing. And I think in exposing the edges of the sort of process of making the work, it felt really exciting to me. I think I always like to have the final presentation kind of link back through to the process of how the work was made, because I've kind of presented work in the past with this sort of like studio logic of like, if I've used pin boards and like pin drawings to them before, or I've had works kind of hanging, and just playing around with those kind of presentation methods that feel like they link to how I work. And so for this show I pinned works to this wooden board that echoed how the works were made. So I had stapled them to wooden board, kind of gessoed them, and then they kind of shrunk back into their own sort of tension as a piece, and then worked on it. And I wanted to bring that presentation method into the final way that the work was kind of framed, I guess. So I had a mate in film who actually managed to get me a whole lot of wood, so he was getting the kind of offcuts, yeah, from the film industry that they weren't using, like they were just kind of chucking them away. So I feel like he was quite like the backbone almost of the show and able to like, yeah, providing me with all of this wood that was like perfectly good to use. So yeah, that was awesome. So instead of kind of keeping the staples though, I decided to use these tacks and I tacked the canvas to the board and it almost felt like, I don't know, kind of piercing the imagery too. And my sister brought up an interesting point. She sort of said that they almost feel like kind of stretched skins in a way. Like there's like a kind of uncomfortableness to it. But yeah, an uncomfortable kind of feeling to the kind of tensions of the work being displayed. But also, yeah, I quite like the kind of decorative border of it. Like I quite like, I don't know, doing borders around like books or something when you're a kid, or like fences around like the mini ones in gardens and stuff like that. Like quite, yeah, exposing that sort of frayed decorative edge of the process.
I think it's so effective, and I love that it provides more of an insight into that process. And I'm such a fan of seeing different ways that an artist can explore presentation with a canvas and seeing how far you can stretch that and move that. I love it. As you mentioned at the beginning, you do work across a variety of mediums: drawing, ceramics, painting, metalwork, and sculpture. And for this show, you've got both these mixed media drawings on canvas, as well as these smaller aluminium open sandcast charms, which are scattered around the work in the window, as well as one solo within the gallery space. How do you kind of see these two sides of your practice interacting with each other within the space?
I think that's such a great question. Like to sort of explore working with different materials, and often kind of at once within a body of work, I'll be kind of exploring those ideas through different mediums. And so although it started off with kind of drawings on paper and then them growing to these drawings on canvas, I sort of reconnected with a foundry that I've worked with out West Auckland and wanted to make these charms. It's kind of come from an impulse to like scale up some of the charms that I've made for jewellery in the past. And this jewellery's often been for me kind of like a good luck necklace or something before I do a mural, or I've given it to my sister before she's gone overseas, or given it to my mum. Like it's still kind of quite like, I don't know, like in the family or whatever at this stage. Like it's this work that feels quite like special to me, and like they sort of hold energy or something, and yeah, that they help me to make work in a way. So I think it's quite cool to be making these jewelry pieces that they feel like they hold the energy that like helps me to make work and to get it ready to kind of be shown and be presented. And so yeah, scaling up these charms was super fun because you're sort of digging into this sand and kind of carving out imagery literally, which is, I feel like, sort of something that I do with paper, just that sort of feeling of kind of, yeah, mining for this imagery. And so to kind of physically be digging it out, I feel like, is such a tactile way of making images. So, I find that really interesting, and how that is still, it feels like drawing to me. And so to present the works, the metal works alongside the drawing together felt important. I had presented them together before in like a mural work where I'd painted a mural and I had some metal works sitting on top of them. And for this show, I was actually going to kind of take that logic of like piercing the images with these tacks sort of further, and then maybe like add them to the works as kind of charms, or like, I don't know, dress them up for being presented in the city. I kind of thought that it was this funny thing that I sort of wanted to do. But I think I decided that they didn't need to be attached to the works themselves. Like, I feel like the works were, they felt like they were finished in and of themselves, but I still wanted them to be part of the process because I'd always kind of considered them with these drawings. And so at the show at Melanie Roger, they are shown kind of primarily in the window space, which I really like containers, like thinking about displaying work in containers, and like the drawing, the page is a container, or a table is a container, the room is a container, as ways of playing with installation. And so most of them are kind of trapped in this container with one of the paintings there that also kind of has these containers within it. So yeah, I feel like they're able to kind of, I don't know, welcome people into this space or something as well. And then there's one of them that's escaped kind of into the gallery space, and it's kind of in a nice kind of gap there between the works on canvas and the drawings. And yeah, I think I chose that one because it was the only one with legs, so like the only one that could like feasibly get out of the container and like work its way into the gallery space. So yeah, I think it's fun to kind of have those little touches and be a bit playful with your installation. Yeah,
for sure. I think it creates such a nice complementary relationship and interesting conversation within the space.
Mm.
Your drawing practice does tend to explore this kind of playful tension between embracing the potential for these messy, expressive and loud mark makings while also depicting imagery. In terms of subject matter, although often obscured, what do you kind of find yourself interested in exploring in your practice?
Yeah, I think the fact that it is obscured is really important. Mm. I think kind of without like obscuring it, I'd find it hard to make imagery. Like the fact that it is obscured, I like to kind of hold the mark making and the imagery on kind of equal planes. So you're kind of working with the impulses of the materials, the impulses of the marks and the impulses of like the maker or the imagery that's wanting to come out. So yeah, I think the obscuring is important and almost, yeah, tricks me into making work. So I am sort of, yeah, sitting down and starting to draw these things and I'm not sure kind of what's going to emerge. So I like to hold it quite lightly in terms of the image making. Like I think sometimes there's more of like a narrative or a feeling or something that I'm kind of keeping in the back of my mind, but also a lot of the time I think drawing and making work for me is a practice of checking in with myself, and it can be something that I don't think I have to have these sort of clear intentions in order to make work. It's something that kind of clarity is kind of like created or something through making the work, but also keeping it so ambiguous. I think like going through art school, I feel like clarity of expression is something that's really prioritized in making kind of the idea of a resolved work. And I always really struggled with that. I think that I always liked kind of the scenic route to an idea or an image and like, yeah, keeping these loose ends or elements of process within the final work. But I think in this show specifically, the imagery is definitely kind of connected to myself and my like inner and outer world. So yeah, I was like, you know, walking my dog and that kind of features, or feelings of like, I don't know, smelling cut grass or something out in Pukki, like the kind of landscape of it. And then also those like relationships with myself and making work and family and yeah, all of those kind of difficult and interesting and fun and lovely things. Yeah.
Hmm. And you have such a beautiful way of explaining that. I really like the way you said a scenic route to the kind of imagery. And I think that's, yeah, such a interesting way about approaching it. And I guess that leads on quite well to my next question, because I'd love to hear a little bit more about your process specifically. I did read that there is maybe an element of mind wandering and flitting between relinquishing and retaining conscious control while drawing. Are you able to talk me through a little bit more about your process as a maker? Does it tend to look quite different depending on the medium you're working with in the moment as well?
Yeah, I think sort of how we were talking about before, I consider like all of these things as drawing, kind of despite what kind of physical medium or whatever they are. So I feel like there is like a comfortability when I'm calling all of these things drawing for myself to kind of retain a similar approach depending on what I'm working with. But that's kind of what I'm taking to it. But what the materials are taking to it is something different as well. So yeah, when I'm working with sand casting, which I love so much, you've got like the kind of like grit of the material is at a larger scale. So instead of working with like graphite or inks, you're working with actual like sand particles that you can kind of feel, or you're pushing and you're thinking about how like the molten aluminium's gonna flow. So you're kind of, yeah, considering the materials and how they work and how they feel as you're making the work. So I think in terms of the like, yeah, mind wandering aspects of the work, I think it's in that same vein of kind of trying to hold like image making or art making lightly and just having it as something for me that like opens up a space rather than it's this kind of destination of a certain like image that I'm wanting to achieve or a story that I'm wanting to achieve or a certain series of a certain number. Like it's keeping it open in the way that like a blank page is open. And I think I really like drawing on paper and A4 paper for that, because it seems like the most like natural and easy way to be making an image. I think maybe it's because I'm more practiced with it as well, but I'm able to just sit in front of that and have some materials around me, and then kind of intuitively I'll pick up a colour, and then I'm able to check in with myself in order to be like, okay, what colour's next? And it happens and kind of builds quite naturally. And often the practice of drawing for me is kind of knowing when to stop. Like, mm-hmm. I feel like there are so many drawings that feel quite kind of gorgeous and open, like they have these like almost portals back to the start of the image where you have like the blank paper or the blank canvas still visible. There's these others that feel almost like overcooked in a way where they're like really densely layered and are charged with this kind of overdoing. Yeah, so I think drawings on paper are kind of really beautiful for that, and I was trying to take that energy through to the canvas works and treat them in a similar way. But yeah, I find I've done like oil painting before, and that's really I find it quite tricky, I think, because I'm like quite an impatient, like fast maker, that when I'm working with that it can get quite like muddled and quite liquid, because that's like the nature of the material, whereas like the drawing and those kind of dry mediums that I can do washes and stuff after, but kind of builds up and you have like this gorgeous kind of scaffolding of the imagery that I think, yeah, you can see like the layers of how it's been created.
Here at 95BFM, we ran out of ideas for merch, so we got the kids to do it. And honestly, the future of graphic design is in excellent hands.
We've just dropped a 95BFM kids show tee, and it's been designed by one very talented kids show listener. Thanks, mate. We've also got staple tees and hats available to purchase. So get your summer outfit sorted and pre-order your 95BFM merch now from twotonesmerch.co.nz.
I believe in like the solar system. I believe in space. I really do believe in space.
Spaced Out. Josh Aoraki from Auckland Stardome Observatory and Planetarium talks everything spacey on Spaced Out. 4:40 every other Tuesday.
The worms better watch their back.
Sometimes you need a bit of uns.
That snooze button better be disarmed.
I like it. It's making my eyelid twitch. Love it.
And the wrong side of the bed better shuffle over.
And they're just so beautifully, like, menstrual.
Because we've got a little something for your gratitude journal.
Cowbella. Cowbella.
Cowbella. Cowbella.
It's the 95BFM Breakfast Show with your hosts, Rosetta and Millie. 7 till 10 every weekday. Thanks to 8:30 Coffee Roasters.
You ready to read your first ever ad?
Maybe.
Not nervous?
No.
Loosen up, you'll be fine. Just read the script. Off you go.
Tune in to breakfast on Mondays. Hear about some books from some pretty smart people, and they love books. You'll hear about, like, books you want to read or maybe you haven't heard of. How was that?
Pretty loose. Let's try another.
It's Loose Reads, Mondays on 95BFM Breakfast, thanks to Time Out Bookstore, 432 Mount Eden Road.
Various artists, so you can go to the opening for more than just the snacks.
Provenance Third was a group exhibition on at Ivan Anthony in September. It brings together a collection of artists, emerging, established, as well as European antiquities. I caught up with one of the emerging artists from the show, Sophie Gregg, back in September. Sophie Gregg produces mesmerizing paintings that draw from the medieval, Renaissance, and illuminated manuscripts, as well as personal family narratives, creating works enriched in intricate webs of fairy tale-like fables, encased in these architectural framing devices, housing these women of Greg's practice as well as their stories and lessons that they pass on. Here is my interview with Sophie now.
Hi, I'm Sophie Gregg and I'm a painter. I'm a recent graduate from Elam and my paintings are very much inspired by medieval illuminations and Renaissance art. I am really drawn to the idea of paintings that are sort of little tableaus or scenes from stories or fairy tales or sort of personal narratives from my family, especially the women in my family. And so I guess I'm also really concerned with depicting these sort of female characters that live in this kind of symbolic world that's populated by all sorts of creatures and lots of demons that are always attacking them.
Gorgeous. And you currently have work showing in Provenance the Third, a group exhibition at Ivan Anthony. These works inhabit a real sense of storytelling, this quality of myth and folklore, while also being informed with this rich history of medieval and Renaissance. What draws you to the works of the medieval and Renaissance?
I mean, mainly I think it's that I grew up surrounded by that kind of historical art canon. My mum is a amazing artist herself who has always been really drawn to the work of old masters like Ribera and Caravaggio and all of the Renaissance artists. And so that was huge for her art practice, which had a really big influence on me growing up. And she's also a collector of all of this crazy old religious artwork. So
so your house was pretty full with all these works?
Yeah, it was about 10 Jesuses in every room. So it's really second nature for me. Just where I draw all my inspiration from, I can't really help it.
Your own works have this real feeling of peering in on an alternate world and its beings, like watching a scene unfold within the confinements of the frame and at times being confronted by the subject staring back at you, breaking the fourth wall in a sense. Could you speak a bit more about this element of storytelling within your work? Where does this world of your paintings arise from?
Yeah, I've always been really drawn to fairy tales and folklore and oral histories. There's something about how these stories are so symbolic and so stripped back and often bizarre and grotesque that they have a way of talking around these big subjects that, you know, are the most important parts of our lives. I find it really interesting, the history of fairy tales, like if you take Red Riding Hood, for instance, that it became this like morality tale. But the earliest version of Red Riding Hood that we have has got a really complicated moral lesson to it. Red Riding Hood tricks the wolf by pretending she has to like go pee outside. It's like much more cutthroat and kind of ruthless than the version that we've grown up with. So there's this real getting to the heart of something, like with Little Red Riding Hood, even though it's about this, you know, totally fantastical tale of a wolf, you know, kidnapping this girl, there's a way that it talks about how in danger little girls are in the world that feels so much more real than just discussing it up front. And so sort of folk tales and fairy tales and dreams are, you know, huge inspirations for me because they have this opaque, strange way of talking about things that feels so much more true than actually just discussing them in an intellectual way. They get to like the irrational, emotional truth. Yeah, I'm always trying to do that with my paintings. I want them to feel really true, even if I don't know quite exactly what I'm trying to directly say with them, but they should feel true.
And do they all like live in their own little universes, or do you feel like with each painting and with each project, you're kind of layering and building onto this world of your works?
Yeah, I definitely think of all of these women as living in the same universe. There's this narrative written by this medieval female writer called Christine de Pizan, called The City of Ladies, or The Book of the City of Ladies, where she writes about building a city where all of these great women throughout history and mythology all live together. And I really like that idea of building a world for all of these women to live in, instead of collecting all these women together. And I feel like each woman has her own little story and her own little journey and little nugget of sort of psychodrama to figure out or represent.
Like our own little fable.
Yeah, exactly. And together they kind of represent what it is to be a woman and what it is to be a woman specifically within my family history. It's sort of a way of figuring out what it means for us to all be here and all be related to each other and all inherit the traumas and the histories that we've all gone through together.
Mm. And the imagery used within your work, are they informed by specific medieval or Renaissance references or memory or kind of like entirely imagined? You kind of briefly talked about it, but a bit more about that specific imagery.
Yeah, I mean, each painting comes together sort of like a Frankenstein's monster. Like they're stitched together from all these different references.
Mm.
Like my painting Catamenia, which is in Provenance right now, that was originally inspired by this little detail in a medieval illumination of a woman with this demon sitting on her big billowing skirts, and it's kind of like pulling her down. And I just loved that image so much, and I knew that I wanted to steal it. And from there, it sort of became also about the reference to Veronica's veil, a lady holding up the veil with a skinned rabbit on it, which is a reference to a personal family story, have come down to me like fairy tales, with references from, you know, Western art canon and things like medieval illuminations and things like that, stitching them together until they're their own alive body, like Frankenstein's monster. In the end, they always turn into these very like universal archetypal images and tableaus.
Mm. And housing these fables, these images and these characters of these women, your paintings often sit within these quite intricate architectural frames that act as this continuation of the painting, extending the world of the works while also acting as architecture itself, housing these figures and their worlds. Could you talk a bit more about these frames and their relationship with the painted image?
Yeah, the framing devices really came out of my frustration with just the rectangle and looking a lot at medieval paintings and how they existed as art objects as opposed to just two-dimensional things that lived on the wall. These were objects that were on church altars and were real solid things that had, this kind of architectural quality to them. And so I really wanted to try and harness that for my own paintings. There's something kind of insufficient about just the square or the rectangle or the flat surface that I was getting really, frustrated with, because I felt like I wanted to make a real home for these characters, these women. I wanted to build something that they could live in rather than just represent them. I wanted to bring them into this world in a really material way that felt solid.
Mm, beautiful. And I'm gonna switch it up a little, bringing it back into the materiality, into the process of your work. Your work showcases this really beautiful pairing of painting and drawing to create wonderful contrast within the works. Have you always explored this merging of your drawing and painting practice within your works?
I started really exploring the drawing aspect of my work kind of by accident. I was doing a year at uni where I was just studying for my BA in English and anthropology and working almost full-time, and I just had no time to do any painting. And so I just let myself off the hook and decided no painting for a year. I'm just going to draw whenever I get the chance.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the best thing I ever did for my art practice, I think. It totally changed how I felt I should be painting. I think I used to kind of go on autopilot and just paint things in quite a traditional, realistic, figurative way. And so with the drawing, I learned that, you know, something could be finished without necessarily needing to follow all of those traditional techniques to a T.
Like a place to like kind of work things out, like without that kind of pressure of that finished painting.
Exactly. It gives you so much more freedom when you don't owe it to the work to make it this complete finished thing in the way that you have kind of been programmed to think it must be finished. And a lot of my favorite artists, like Holbein is an amazing drawer, and some of my favorite works of his are just these really simple portrait drawings. And I looked a lot as well at the etchings of Albrecht Dürer. And then when it came to merging painting and drawing together, it's actually this one painting by Van Eyck was left unfinished, a painting he did of St. Barbara, that I just got so fixated on and obsessed with. Because even though the end result is unintentional, like it was just in left unfinished, there's this really magical quality to it of the blended drawing. It's got this really magical quality to it with the drawing on the underpainting left exposed and just this smoky background sky put in. And so for a lot of my last year at Elam, I was kind of trying to chase that quality that one painting had, without it being this kind of like horrible gimmicky thing of like, oh, I'm leaving my painting half unfinished. Mm-hmm. I wanted it still to be this like very finished, very resolved outcome, but capturing that softness and sharpness that a drawing can achieve that is hard to do with just painting.
And this painting process, could you talk a bit more about that? Do you undertake quite a traditional painting technique?
I definitely draw really heavily from traditional painting techniques. I used to paint in quite a traditional Flemish style, where you do a grisaille layer or a dead painting, which is just done with white and like raw umber or something like that. And it's just a monochromatic rendering of the image. And then you glaze over that with various layers to get this really realistic kind of effect. And so in recent years, I've been trying to push these really traditional techniques into these more unconventional spaces. But these days, that's kind of the main bulk of the painting that I do, is just this kind of ghostly layer of just painting with white or just doing a single monochromatic glaze over the top of a dead layer and letting the drawing and the color of the panel underneath come through as the shadow.
That was my darling Sophie Gregg speaking to me about her work in Providence the Third, which was a group exhibition at Ivan Anthony in September. Now on to our next one.
What's it all for?
Various artists.
Differences in Kind and Rhythm was one of my favourite exhibitions this year, pairing the work of Peter Robinson and Italian painter Giorgio Griffa at Te Uru Waitakere Contemporary Gallery in June, eliciting a considered and cross-cultural conversation between the works and their respective practices. The paintings by Griffa and sculptural forms by Robinson respond to related concepts of repetition and difference, emergence and continuum, revealing common threads between them through the lyrical, complex, and the sharp and soft, illustrating subtle distinctions between similar forms and difference in expression. Here is my interview with Peter Robinson now. So Difference in Kind and Rhythm is the second in a series of dialogue exhibitions at Te Uru. How did the show kind of come about? Was it a curatorial pairing by James Gatt or more of an artist-led pairing?
No, it was a curatorial pairing. I'd worked with James Gatt in Sydney, in a show called Sculpture Salon at Sarah Cotier Gallery, probably about 10 years or so ago. So he was familiar with my work, and I think he just saw a relationship between me and Griffa.
So. Mm.
He did really well with that. I feel like the show looks so beautiful, and I think it's such a great pairing. But I'm interested to know in how this show kind of unfolded between an artist from Aotearoa and one from Italy. Your new work responds to the more historical work of Griffa's, and I was wondering if this was like more of a collaborative process as part of like a conversation with the artist, or was it a response purely to the work itself?
I think it was really James Gatt's response to both works and him seeing connections and relationships between the two. Of course, my work has an origin in Arte Povera, which is an Italian art movement, and Griffa emerged as an artist during that period. So although Griffa is a painter and I'm a sculptor, there are interlinkages between the work.
Definitely. And yeah, as you say, like, there are really strong interlinks, and the two of you have quite a unique approach to exploring these ideas of like patterns and shape and form through repetitive gestures. How have you experimented with shape and form in this show, and what kind of key ideas underline this process of making?
In my response to the last question, I sort of missed out something. I was aware of Griffa's work about 15 years ago. There was a catalogue of his work in ArtSpace, and I was very taken by the work. And I was interested in seeing if I could make a sculptural response to his work. So I was already sort of in the zone, say, 15 years or so ago. I don't know if I really succeeded in doing that, but it was something I was trying to do, and I was very taken by the language of his work, which I think at first is not apparent, but as you spend time with it, you start to see relationships between the numbers that he uses and the patterns and the lines. And the work for an initiated viewer is, I think, understandable without the need to reference any literature surrounding the work. And that's something that very much interests me, that when people come into the show, they don't need any information and they can just engage with the work. Some works are opaque, some works I think are engaging for the lay viewer as much as the initiated viewer. So some of the work dates back about 10 years. So working with pattern form was something that's just part of my practice. My process is sort of working in a vacuum. I go into the studio and often I don't know what I'm doing. Ideas emerge out of the process. Or I might discover a small idea and then think about how I can exaggerate that. So I was making some small wire grids at some point, and then an opportunity came at the Centre of Contemporary Art in Christchurch to really expand those grids. And so I take those opportunities to exaggerate and to test the limits of a particular pattern or form. So one idea just seems to naturally lead to another.
Totally. And yeah, you kind of touched on it a little bit, but you work across mediums, having explored sculpture, drawing, painting, printmaking and installation within your practice. You are primarily a sculptor, and the show is exhibiting solely your sculptural and installation practice. Was that a conscious choice in relation to Griffa's work in the space?
It was a conscious choice by the curator.
Right.
I think from the outset it was Griffa has the walls and you have the floor.
Nice. And I feel like, you know, with that, with pairing the two of you, there's quite a beautiful cultural exchange element to this exhibition, where you're making from the perspective of a Māori worldview and Griffa from his Western Italian background. How do you kind of see the two interrelate and contrast in the show?
Well, I think there's some very obvious connections in terms of the spiral and the kuru. I do actually have an Italian heritage myself.
Oh.
The origins of that heritage are in Piedmont and Lombardy. The family name is Luzzetti, and there's a town right on the outskirts of Turin called Luzzetti.
Oh, wow.
But I think really it's just an interest. We have a common interest in exploring things formally and seeing what permeates or expands from that origin.
Mm.
Totally. And maybe this is a question for the gallery staff, but I was wondering whether you could speak to it as well. How did Griffith's work arrive? Because it's installed in these fold creases, which are deliberately visible. Could you speak to that a little?
Okay. I don't know if I'm allowed to say this or not, but I'll go ahead. When James showed me his initial design for the show, the first space involved this three small paintings by Griffa. I was a bit shocked by that at first. It's like, oh my goodness, that's going to be a very sparse show. But trusted in the process, and it worked. But I think there are 15 Griffa paintings, and one is very large. It must be 4 metres by 3 metres, something like that.
Mm.
And again, it folds up. And the second shock that I got was seeing the Griffa crate, which would have been about a metre by 250 millimetres by 600 millimetres.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole show fitted in that crate. And it was like, oh, my goodness, where are the other works? But, of course, they fold down. But we opened up the crate, and inside the crate is a smaller box, which is probably 800 by 600 by 100 millimetres.
Wow.
So the whole show, it just compacts into a very small crate, and I'm very envious of that, actually.
Yes, true. Very different to your practice.
Yeah, but I really enjoy those creases in the work. I think they create a nice linkage between my work and his, because it gives the paintings a kind of sculptural quality as well as a painting space.
I like that a lot. And I understand that you had a number of your students from Elam involved in the exhibition as well, which would be such a cool opportunity. What did that kind of relationship and process look like?
It came fairly last minute in the piece. Probably I put it to James about 3 months ago. I often like to involve my students in my exhibitions if I can. I think as a senior artist, it's my responsibility to create opportunities for young artists. And the students in this show are from Studio One, their first year. They result from a four-week course in sculpture, an introduction. And I'm always astounded at the results. And I'm often more excited by my students' work than work that I see out and around in the galleries. But that's because I have a particular liking for sculpture and abstract sculpture, and that's what I'm teaching.
Yeah.
So it just seemed like a great opportunity, and it's a way of creating excitement for the students to like be working at art school in the abstract and then to be showing in a public gallery. I think makes it real and makes it exciting for them.
Totally. Which work in the show was that in?
Oh, so you walk into the gallery and there's the front desk, and then behind the desk is a shelf.
Yeah.
And there are about 12 to 14 works sitting on the shelf. There's also a work sitting on the floor, and there's a work that looks like a matchbox sitting on the counter.
Yes, darling, but is it art?
Tui Diprose is a queer interdisciplinary artist and body worker of holistic healing. In a coming together of knowledge, they engage within an artistic practice that centres in jewellery, installation and writing through an exploration of themes of place, environmentalism and decolonisation. Diprose's exhibition Rituals that showed at Room in June wove together an array of artistic techniques and material. Silver, sapphire, bone, harakeke and clay gathered within the show to create a symphony of material dialogue and ritual. I caught up with Tui back in June to talk about the show and overall practice. Here it is now.
Kia ora, ko Tui toku ingoa. I am Tangata Tiriti from Tāmaki Makaurau. I am an interdisciplinary artist working in jewellery, installation, writing, and I'm a body worker of holistic healing. My creative practice centres in jewellery. I work across a wide array of materials that are usually found, foraged or gifted to me. My favourite materials are stone, clay, harakeke and tikoka. In the rituals exhibition, I work with silver, stone, plants, ceramics, wood, video installation and a small book of poems. Key themes that run through my practice are place, environmentalism, animism, decolonisation, dreams and rituals. And beneath these wider themes, I contemplate and creatively draw through thoughts of the Anthropocene death, grief, and healing.
Beautiful. Your current show, Rituals at Room, showcases these methods of creating within ritual, resulting in a show that really transforms the gallery space into a place of ritual itself. Can you speak a bit more to this idea of ritual, both in relation to its thematic navigation within the body of work, as well as what it means for you to create within ritual?
I find that ritual as a way of being helps me create deeper meaning in my day-to-day. From small rituals, such as lighting a candle, or larger rituals that are in tune with the Maramataka moon phases and take hours, days, weeks, or longer to move through. The body of work in rituals is a compilation of jewellery made over the past few years, created across journeys as I moved and lived in various places throughout the Motu, way down in the Otago region, then up to Northland. The silver hairpins, called Rivers of Time, were made during rituals where I engaged in the Akashic Records, which is a place beyond time involving the soul's journey through many lifetimes on Earth, often known as past life regression. In this ritual space, I was channeling a previous lifetime or an aspect of my soul that helped me create in the present. Leading up to the rituals exhibition, I stepped into a month-long ritual where I was in Wānanga the whole time, meaning I was communing with the spirit world very deeply, up making at the witch's hour, losing complete track of time, or writing before I'd left bed in the morning. It was immersive and took me into some deep places, both within myself and as a healing ritual for the collective within my making. Within this body of work, I engage in tikanga and rongoā Māori due to the immediacy of connection to my surroundings here in Aotearoa, which grounds me into this earthen reality and helps create structure for my making practice as I follow the tikanga of tapu and noa when making. My rituals involve working with the spiritual kaitiaki of the whenua, the soul of the natural world, the atua, my spirit guides, along with the Māori of the materials themselves.
And you briefly touched on this, but this body of work, you engage with an array of mediums, your pieces acting as these anchors of material form as you create amongst a bridge of worlds. With the spirit world alive, you navigate through materials of silver, sapphire, bone, harakeke, clay, and many more. They gather within the show to create a symphony of material dialogue. Can you talk to me through your use of these materials and the specific techniques that you use with them, and why you are specifically drawn to these materials and techniques?
Often the materials themselves will find me, or they'll jump out at me, calling and asking to be worked with. Sometimes it's an embodied tug, turning my head to look specifically at a material. It catches my eye and seems to be more vivid than anything else. Sometimes I simply see it in my inner eye or mind's eye, the material that I need to work with, presenting itself to me over and over again until I pay attention and use it. If I'm outside, the tree or plant will communicate with me, asking to be incorporated into my work. Everything is symbolic, yet also has its own innate sacred modi, and the materials will communicate this as I work. This is often the way with many jewelers or makers who choose to work with a specific material, that the material speaks to them and shows them how they want to shift forms through the maker. For example, the necklace titled Talisman for Seeds, made of black clay, harakeke, and kauri gum, references both the darkness of deep earth and deep space. Carrying a weight when worn acts as an embodiment aid for those who slip beyond their bodies too often, gently drawing their attention back to the body as the sensation of the necklace is felt. On plant fibres, tikoka has a connection to spiritual sovereignty. Harakeke symbolises whānau. These feature in the work Talisman 3 Light Codes and are material manifestations for calling in new souls to the planet, to be born on the planet, who carry new frequencies, representing the soul in its lightest aspect, anchoring in healing codes of the sun and the life-giving nature of photosynthesis.
Beautiful. Accompanying the physical works within the show, you also have a booklet of writings on offer. Could you speak to me a little bit about the text itself, as well as its inclusion in the show, and the dialogue and kind of relationships it has with the other works in the room?
The booklet of writings was one of the works made during my month-long ritual leading up to this show. It was mostly streams of consciousness, bringing subconscious thoughts and feelings to words that would simply arrive and find themselves there on my page. The intention was to create writings that would accompany the artworks, but I found myself journeying through my interior world differently than I initially anticipated, resulting in a work of itself. What was arising was the written processing of thoughts and emotions lurking in my subconscious, drawn out during the quiet of night, relating to my journey and my making journey over the past few years, living in the mountains close to the land, of supporting loved ones through pregnancies, miscarriages, birthing babies, of loss, both collective and personal, of buried grief, processing the death of loved ones, which as we draw close to Matariki, they were coming to the forefront of my mind and writing. There's also environmental grief, the Anthropocene, wars on the planet, and being an embodied soul, meaning the ways which I find myself more at ease in nature than anywhere else, where I have my poems devoted to an embodiment of nature itself, such as the words like becoming rivers, becoming the mountain, where I release ego and attachment to being human and become nature, which is also my making process and how I create my jewelry talismans. That relationship reveals itself through the choice of materials I use, that being ones I find in my environment on walks out in nature, ones that I hunt down for specific purposes, or those as gifts.
Beautiful. I think it's such a wonderful part of the show that really is something that you can take home with you, which I think is really lovely. The show really welcomes audiences into an act of participation and encounter, with multiple points within the show becoming a site for people to engage within ritual, inviting them into a facilitated ritual in which there are kind of instructions or actions for them to engage with. Could you talk a little bit about these invitations of ritual that you are inviting audiences to participate in, as well as your overall hopes for viewers as they navigate the show?
The intention here was to create pauses for viewers to become part of the art if they wished. The rituals allow them space to gather their thoughts and put them on paper, as in the writing ritual where you're asked to write a love poem to your body. This was to give a moment of embodied self-awareness, guiding the viewer back to self as they navigate the space. It's a little confronting to be suddenly self-aware and contemplating one's own body, hence the need to anchor in aroha. The water rituals in the ceramic vessels that I made are based on Dr. Masaru Emoto's theory that the molecular crystal structure within water can be affected and changed through our thought forms, meaning the vibration of our thoughts can facilitate change. Water is featured largely in the rituals exhibition, rivers being both the muse of creative endlessness, sites throughout the motu that I connected into as spiritual anchors, along with our human bodies and the earth's body being mostly composed of water, which feels very significant to me. If we can transform the crystalline structure of water through our intentions, and water is a conduit for energy, then I will carry the water in the rituals exhibition shared here back to a larger body of water, to then amplify the energetic intentions, carrying them even further into the collective consciousness for healing. Ultimately, the entire exhibition of rituals then becomes a healing space for personal and collective transformation.
Ko ira te hōtaka katoa mō tēnei wiki, nei te mihi kia koutou katoa, e kōrero mai ki māua mō tēnei rā.
that's all for us for various artists for today. Ngā mihi nui to everyone who spoke with us this year.
Nei rā, hoki te mihi ki a koutou e whakarongo ana. Thanks for tuning in throughout the year. It's been such a pleasure.
And remember, you can listen back to all of today's pieces and all of our other pieces on 95bfm.com or check out our Instagram at 95bfm various artists for more.
Next up is The Land of the Good Groove with Mari. My name is Sophia.
I'm Maya.
And that was Various Artists.
We'll catch you next year. We're taking a 3-week break and we'll be back at you on 16th of Jan.
You're listening to 95BFM. Ka kite. Have a lovely break.
Bye.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.